Good morning and hello again from the Sustainability and Climate Change podcast. This is Suraj Bhatia again. I have a returning guest with me today, Dan Delury. Dan was with me a few months ago giving his thoughts about climate change, and he's fresh back from Dubai from COP28. Welcome, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Suraj.
Okay, so let's jump into it. I think many of our listeners would be very interested in hearing your views. I remember when we spoke last time, you mentioned that these COPs have turned into mainly trade shows, and quite a trade show it was. I heard about 100,000 people attended this COP. Yeah. So I'd like to... go ahead.
I mean, I guess I would begin by saying, you know, the word primarily is important, because it's not as though the UN process and all of those meetings with respect to producing agreements are not happening. But they used to be the main show and the main reason that people went to the COP, to be a resource to negotiators from their country or other parties. So now, and this started to happen in Paris. Anyway, in Paris, it seemed to be the corner that was turned on the COP, where there were a lot of people coming, not really to get involved in the negotiations, but to have it be a conference, an expo, you know, a place where they could go and network and present and learn and so on. And that has continued to be ramped up as part of the COP. And as you mentioned, this one was really ramped up. There's also the Blue Zone is the official UN zone where you need a special badge to get in and all of that. But this year, right outside the Green Zone, which used to be pretty small, the Green Zone itself was a massive conference and expo in its own right. And also there were numerous events around the city in hotels and small conference centers and so on. So yes, it was definitely a big deal.
So in terms of the agreement reached in the Blue Zone, let's talk about the choice of the wording transitioning away from fossil fuels. Do you think that's a good outcome? And where does this lead us, and what exactly does it mean?
Well, the first thing I'm prompted to say is that this was COP28, as most people probably heard it described as. And that means it's the 28th year of COPs. And this is the first year that any product officially blessed by the countries coming out of the COP included the words fossil fuel, which when you think about it is, I think, a little bit remarkable. It sort of, to me, shows a number of different things, and it shows the challenges, if not problems, of the COP process. Even getting to the language that you cited, as a lot of people saw in the headlines as they followed it in general media, was a real challenge. But I know from my work on Capitol Hill that when a bill has been in process for a long time and it gets towards the end and people think that they might end the session without anything to show at all, people start to make compromises. They sort of get caught up in it and they want to produce something. And so I think that happens a lot at COPs. And so, you know, this is a good agreement to talk about a transition from fossil fuels, but there's no specificity as to what the word transition means. And one of the challenges of the COP process has been agreements that come out of it that aren't really enforceable among the countries.
Yes. So what does that specifically mean for the entire discussion about carbon capture, storage and utilization? And if you say transitioning away, how do the oil producing nations and the oil producing companies feel about use of CCS, and how does the rest of the non-oil producing nations or non-oil producing entities feel about carbon capture and storage as a tool to transition away? And
yeah, I mean, that was a major topic in all sorts of different ways at the COP. I mean, there were numerous presentations on that by all sorts of different parties. And I think that gets to your question. I don't know of anyone that was at the COP which is against it. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember who it was or could have been that spoke out against it. Yes, you know, there's a devil in the details in terms of how it's done and, you know, what the subsidies are and the tax incentives and all of that. But I think everyone sees it as part of the future. Now, having said that, one exception does come to mind, and that is the use of carbon capture to prolong the life of existing fossil fuel power plants and other industrial plants. And, you know, this is something that the fossil fuel industry, as they look for any, you know, type of thing to hang their hat on to move forward, they, you know, see that as something that they can talk a lot about. Because it doesn't mean that there isn't a future of fossil fuels. Now, you know, that assumes that there's, you know, well, I want to address the timetable. I mean, as with any new technology, I mean, let's take carbon extraction. There's one plant in Iceland that is really operating commercially, and that's at a pretty small scale. There's a major effort as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act to create hubs that will do that, sometimes tied to producing hydrogen. But it still is something that it eliminates or reduces the need to eliminate and reduce fossil fuel use. Strictly from a timetable for development and deployment of new technology purposes. So, yeah, I mean, you know, the gas people in particular, you know, they stress it as a reason for their continued existence far into the future. But, you know, even there, I think everyone is supporting its development and deployment. They know it's one of the all of the above answers. As long as all of the above means you're doing zero emissions.
Okay. So what about, you know, you mentioned about the issue about enforceability. And, you know, there's this whole thing about previous COP, COP27. There was this talk about the loss and damage, or what was it, COP26, the right. Setup of a loss and damage fund. And now there's discussion about it being woefully underfunded. That goes back to your comment about enforceability. Where do you see that going?
Well, it's been discussed for a number of COPs running, but a significant outcome of COP28 is there was an agreement on loss and damage, otherwise referred to as reparations, to those developing nations that were not responsible for the emissions that are causing the problem that we have today. But next comes the pledges. And even pledges is a word worth discussing for a moment. But then come the pledges. And the pledges are not enough. I forget what the number is that some have come up with as estimates for loss and damages. I'm pretty sure it was in the trillions. And so, you know, where that money will come from remains to be seen. You know, there's another part of the COP and the UN process, the Green Fund. and that has been established for a few years. It's still not fully funded. And this gets to the idea of pledges and what the UN is all about. The pledges made in Paris to reduce emissions, no country is on track to meet their pledge. And the pledges were determined to not be enough to keep us to 1.5. I think they were estimated to keep us at 2 degrees increase, but I don't remember that, you know, for certain. But yeah, I mean, that's the nature of the UN. And, you know, a lot of people know the UN from other things like the Security Council and the golden veto that any nation on the Security Council has. And the UN works by consensus. But, you know, there used to be a different definition, I think, of consensus. Consensus, you know, used to mean that, well, most of the people involved thought that this was okay, so that's the way we'll go forward. But in the UN, at least, consensus has become to mean unanimous. And so that's what weakens the outcome of a COP, is trying to make everyone unhappy, especially when you're dealing with large nations that can really do something about emissions and small nations and so on.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, there are so many different aspects. As you said, indigenous people. The first time when I went to Panama at a regional COP or regional meeting, there was this whole issue about indigenous people in Latin America, which I was completely new to me, but it's getting more and more important.
Well, one thing is that the presence of indigenous peoples is now significant. I mean, what's interesting about the COP is not so many years ago, everyone showed up in Western business dress. And now that's not the case. Everyone wears, you know, the clothing of their home country. And the people from Amazonia show up in some, you know, very interesting clothing, at least as it appears to a Westerner.
Yes, yes. That was my observation as well. At the regional meeting, you know, in Panama. So finally, are there any other thoughts from you about or comments on COP? Well, and actually, I shouldn't say finally. My last question was going to be the discussion about COP29. I believe it's set for Baku, Azerbaijan.
Yes.
But but if you can, your final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, my final thought is that. Well, two final thoughts. One is that I'm just not confident that the UN process is the vehicle that will meet the need. If no other need, the timetable that we're dealing with, which often, if not always, seems to be detached from policy. So there's that part of it. I mean, I believe that if we're going to have real progress on emissions reductions and a transition, it has to be the large countries. It has to be, you know, the G20 or whatever the vehicle is to really do a deal that just by the size of the emissions will have an impact. So that's kind of my belief. I mean, it's hard after 28 COPs to believe that the COP will. You know, it's nice. I mean, even in Paris was a framework. It produced rules for measurement and verification, and all that is needed. But if the enforcement is not there, the other thing is, I used to be quite cynical about the other COP. I used to call it the bad COP next to the good COP of the UN policy, and I referred to the expo part of it and all of that. And now I see it differently. It's really a place where, you know, people working on or interested in or want to learn about climate can go, and it's pretty much one-stop shopping if you want to look at it that way. And so taking that for what it is in that respect, I think it's you know, a good thing. And so I've sort of come around to accept it, which is hard for someone who's a policy guy, first and foremost, and who attended the early COPs. But now I'm okay with it. And I think that's That's a good thing. So in terms of Azerbaijan, I'm sure a lot of people question why Egypt last year and why Dubai this year and why Azerbaijan. I mean, you can draw a circle around them, and it's a pretty tight circle. And not to mention the fact that they're all petro states. But, you know, Egypt is in Africa, Dubai is in Asia, and Azerbaijan is in Europe. And so they rotate the COP around continent by continent. And so that's, you know, it's kind of like the Olympics. I don't know what happens behind the scenes, but so you know, what do I think about Azerbaijan? I saw a headline the other day that, as with Dubai, their oil minister or some senior official from their oil industry will be the president of the COP. So, I mean, from a process and policy standpoint, I would not hope for a lot in Azerbaijan. I don't know what it will mean in other respects. I want to mention one thing, and this sort of combines the fact that it's an annual event and the fact that all these other people go. Sometimes an annual event, and this happens at Climate Week also, an annual event is needed for other people, companies, corporations, NGOs, to time their announcements, but not just time them, to force them to make an announcement. I mean, a lot of you probably saw that at Climate Week. A lot of corporations, they feel they have to make some sort of announcement or pledge at these events. And so in that sense, it sort of becomes a push or a forcing action for a lot of people to take some action. And so I think that's a good thing.
I hope our listeners through the last, this episode and the past two episodes, have got a pretty good idea of what happened at COP28, what were the agreements, what is the prognosis, etc. So, Dan, thanks again for your time today.
Thanks for having me, Suraj.
Okay, perfect. And for all listeners, until next time, thank you and namaste.